Hello, Line Cook Nation. This is Ray DeLucci with the Line Cook Thoughts podcast. Hope everyone is doing well and hope you all are staying safe. Welcome back to another episode of the show. Before we get into the guests today, I do want to share a couple of things. First, if you have not gone to linecookthoughts.com, go check out linecookthoughts.com. It's the official site for our blog. I've done some recent restaurant blogs with Cranes out of Washington, D.C., a one Michelin-starred restaurant, and Pungal Indian Grill, a local restaurant I love in Laurel, Maryland, the DMV area. So go check those blogs out. You can also find official Line Cook Nation merchandise at linecookthoughts.com, so go check it out. Second, if you're listening on Apple, please leave a review. And if you're listening on Spotify now, which is very exciting, please leave a review. You can leave stars on Spotify, and you can leave star reviews and comments on Apple. It helps me get more traction. It helps me learn what else you'd like to see in the podcast. And so please leave a review. Lastly, I want to actually shout out my parents' company. Some of you might not know this, but my mom and dad, a couple of years ago, started their own small business called Kettle Corn Creations out of Western New York, where I'm originally from. And they sell kettle corn. Then they just launched their online website. I'm going to put a link to it in the bio. It's kettlecorncreations.com. And kettle and creations, we'll start with K, obviously, kettle, but K too. And they sell really delicious flavors. Obviously, I'm biased because it's my family, but you should order some and try it out for yourself. A lot of people love it. They have a huge following. They go to, you know, local farmers markets. They do events, and their kettle corn is available online. So if you want to check it out, go to kettlecorncreations.com with flavors such as original in Chicago to cinnamon toast crunch and even buffalo. So go check them out, and yeah, let me know what you think. All right. So my guest today is Zach Moquin. Now, Zach and I met in college, and over the past few years, we've both obviously done our own thing in the industry, and I wanted to have Zach on for a couple of reasons. First off, a little bit about him. He's from Midland, Michigan. His current city, though, is in Boston, Massachusetts, and his current job is a tenant experience manager. You can find him on Instagram at ZAC_MOQUIN. I'll put the information in the description of the show. You can also find him on LinkedIn at Zach Moquin. And yeah, really excited to talk today with Zach because we go into his experience, and I really found his journey interesting because Zach went to the Culinary Institute of America with myself, but then he went on to get a master's in hospitality. And I really think that's an option not a lot of people know about, and I really think it can open up some avenues. So really thank you to Zach for sharing that. And then we talk about just some general thoughts in the industry in terms of how it's changing the labor market, you know, him being a leader in the industry, how he's seen the labor market change, inclusivity in the industry, and so much more. How an environment at work needs to be productive, but it also needs to be welcoming for everyone. So I just want to say thank you to Zach for coming on the show. Thank you all for listening to the show. And here we go. Three, two, one. All right, welcome to the show. If you want to just introduce yourself, that'd be great.
Yeah, my name is Zach Moquin. I was went to culinary school. I got my associates and culinary arts, and then I decided to do a bachelor's in food business management. Recently, I graduated with my MBA in hospitality. And yeah, I was born and raised in Michigan, a really small town, about 40,000 people. Lived there for 18 years. And then I kind of haven't been back since I went to culinary school.
Sounds good. I'm sure we'll get into that. I'm kind of the same with Buffalo. I guess I did go back a little bit to Buffalo during the pandemic. Zach and I met in culinary school. And basically, from there, obviously, we went our separate ways going into the different career paths. But you initially went into culinary school wanting to be a chef, correct? Like wanting to be behind the line?
Yeah, ever since I was probably 13 or 14, you know, I wanted to, you know, I saw what was kind of on TV and some mentors that I had in my life. And I was like, I went into culinary school. That's exactly what I want to do. I, you know, wanted to go to New York. I wanted to do LA and kind of take the dream of, you know, creating dishes in the back house. And definitely, you know, probably 2 years into it, it took a turn and kind of a different career path than what I expected.
Okay. What drew you into cooking in the first place, do you think? Like, was there a moment that you remember?
You know, it's interesting growing up in the Midwest because, you know, your favorite tool in the kitchen is a crock pot. and you know, my mom, you know, God bless her heart, but you know, 6 out of 7 meals a week was in the crock pot just because it was so easy. You know, I mean, you couldn't believe how much stuff you can make in a crock pot. So that was kind of, you know, my first, you know, thoughts of food. And, you know, granted, it wasn't, you know, it was a crock pot, but, you know, Food Network back in the day was something that, for me, at least, it was a dream, because seeing how successful people can be in a different line where they, you know, they obviously didn't expect to go into the food service and then have a, you know, show on Food Network and, you know, be televised all across the world. So Emerald Live was huge, huge when I was younger. You know, I think it was on Thursdays or something, or Sundays, me and my mom sat and watched it very religiously. So that was kind of my first, you know, it was something, but you know, that's not, you know, then when I went to college school, that's not reality. So that was kind of my first intake of the food world.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, Emerald, I mean, kind of similar background. I mean, Buffalo is not known as the culinary capital, although I do sometimes call it that to aggravate people. But no, it is, I can relate to that. My mom did use the crock pot a lot. Obviously, Buffalo's not the Midwest, but just that kind of upbringing. Emerald was huge in our household as well, and just Food Network in general was a huge presence for us. So I can definitely relate to that. So you mentioned, though, that there was a shift about 2 years in, 2 years into culinary school, that you decided you wanted to do front of house. What was the reason for that?
Yeah. So originally, I was only going to do the associate's program. And then I would say maybe 6 months before I graduated associate's, I was on my internship. And I noticed, you know, there's a whole different side of, what it was. And when I didn't really know what I wanted to do, even, you know, when I went to my bachelor's, but I know that I didn't want to be kind of on the line, my whole career, cause there's so much more to it. And even now there's so much more than, you know, I graduate with so many different people who do so many different things. But the shift for me was really, I wanted to learn more and I wanted to do more and I wanted to experience all facets of the industry. So that was like a huge shift for me, that I didn't really feel like I gained as much as I could in that short time. So that's why I extended it. And then after my bachelor's, it was like a whole new thing. I'm like, actually, what do I want to do? And where can I learn more at?
Yeah, it's interesting. I know for me, when I realized I didn't want to go on the quote unquote Michelin path anymore, there's a little bit of a personality, reckoning that I had to go through for a little bit, like, oh my God, like, am I changing as a person? This is something I've been wanting to do for years. Now I have no passion for it. Did you feel any of that? Or when you decided you want to do front of house, were you more excited about the prospect ahead instead of the, I guess, the path that you're leaving behind?
Yeah. You know, I think that I learned it very quickly that where I wanted to go, and at that point was front of house. And I really wanted to learn as much as I could, but I'm so glad that I got that back house training, because a lot of people who I worked with at my first job necessarily didn't have that. So you have a leg up on them and where you want to go. And, you know, knowledge, you know, professors and people who have had as mentors, you know, knowledge and networking is your lifeline. And that's true. And it really, front of house was an expert that I could really use what I learned the past, you know, 2 years, and then really gain it, and then kind of base off that, go farther.
Okay. What was your path upon graduation? Where did you go initially?
Yeah. So initially, I had two options. One was, I was going to work for a luxury cruise line, a yacht. And it had, you know, Thomas Kelly restaurants on it. A 7-day cruise was like something like, it was like 25 grand. Yeah. And I would have started in Europe and go everywhere. And, cause I was interviewing for this luxury hotel line, I mean, luxury hotel company, Four Seasons at the time, but the interview was taking forever. It was like, I think I was on like 3 or 4 months and I was getting so close. I'm like, I have to make a decision. And I was just responding to the email from this cruise line. And then I finally got the offer, for 4 seasons. So I was like, you know, do I want to live on a yacht, you know, 3 months, work 7 days, and then kind of 2 months off and back at it again? Or do I want to kind of explore, you know, the hotel market? And, you know, at that time, I, you know, talked to mentors and my parents, and, you know, the hotel offered me more career growth and like future growth of kind of me developing. So that's where I went. So I started, I did a Mandarin training program at Four Seasons in Washington, D.C. Originally, I kind of was like, oh, I want to do Florida. So I was like, they were like, they always have you name your top three. So I was like, Orlando, Miami, or Palm Beach. And then they're like, how about Four Seasons, D.C.? So I was like, oh, okay. So I started there, and I did a year mentorship program, and I did 6 months in a room service, running that kind of front of house team. And then I did 6 months in their breakfast and brunch restaurant. And I did that for a year in 2016.
Yeah, I know the Four Seasons manager and training program is pretty well known. As you know, I did the Hillstone manager and training program, which is pretty good as well. I think those are really foundational. I think not as many people know about those. And just so what we're talking about really quickly is oftentimes hotel groups, restaurant groups will have manager and training programs. It's kind of a fast track into management. So basically you apply, and then if you get accepted, Zach's was 6 months or a year, mine was 6 months, and they kind of set you up to be in some sort of managerial role post the course. And you're still working, you're not doing it for free. You're getting paid and whatnot. But after that set amount of time, you can become a manager within that. And so 2016, that happens for you. How long were you with Four Seasons for?
The first go around, I was with them for a year. I was nearing the end of my program, and I really didn't know kind of if I wanted to stay with the company and, you know, continue at DC or move around. And at that time, the company wasn't really growing in the United States too much. So I got an opportunity to work with a restaurant group based in, they're based in New York City, but they were opening four restaurants in Orlando. So they needed a kind of opening management team to there. And, you know, it was a very interesting experience because we opened four restaurants in about a week and a half. And you're talking, the restaurant I worked at, we did 750 covers on Friday, Saturday night, from 6 p.m. till 9:30. I wouldn't recommend opening four restaurants in a week and a half. But it was such a cool experience. And I think when you open a new restaurant, you just have to know everything and you learn so much. I mean, you're talking about creating floor plans and training, you know, staff and hiring staff. And you know, when you open a restaurant, it's never smooth sailing, you know, starting day one. So I would say, I mean, anyone in the career, I mean, opening a restaurant's, you know, really key because you get to, you know, learn everything and you didn't realize, oh, I have to order this for the restaurant to run every day.
Yeah. I think that's a really valid point. We can talk on that a second. I think opening a restaurant or when a chef comes in and redoes a restaurant, I think one of the most valuable experiences I've ever had was when my mentor of mine, he was one of the first podcast guests, Ross. He came back to the Buffalo, New York region. This is when I was on externship, and I got to cook under him when I came home in between extern, because we had like a super long break during college, and then off and on, and then post-graduation, I cooked for him for about half a year. But just the ability to work with him and work through new menus was really great. And yeah, I think that it's super cool when you're opening because you get to touch a lot of things. I think that goes for anything in food business too. I've been fortunate enough to be kind of in the forefront of some newer beginnings of food business in a couple of different roles, and obviously starting my own thing here in terms of like food media. But I think, as you can attest to probably, that you see so much because you're kind of relied on so much for so many different things. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, when you open a place, a new chef comes in, you know, even a new GM in front of house comes in, I mean, the restaurant will change in some aspect of it. You know, and it could be little things, and it could be the whole menu, the whole decor of the restaurant, whatever service style, whatever kind of their vision is, their past is, what they like. So 100% agree.
Awesome. I'm getting tripped up in my head. You completed the MBA program, or you're in it currently?
So during I completed it at the very beginning of 2020. And it's pretty funny because when I was looking to go to culinary school, there was four options that five I could go to. Two were in Michigan, super great community college programs. They have a really, you know, for a community college, I would say that they, you know, they were a part of brand new facilities, chefs who have been in the industry a very long time. And they were just were kind of a small scale for me because it was kind of like a minor in it. So it was like a 2-year program, but you do like 6 months of it, and they had like a small restaurant. And then it was Culinary Institute of America. I had a really good friend in high school. Her sister went there, so she was kind of my my bridge to get into CIA and kind of like do the campus tour, et cetera. And then it was Johnson & Wales. And Johnson & Wales was my last stop. And we love CIA so much that like my mom was like, oh, we were on the college tour. You don't even have to go. We already know the answers. I'm like, oh, let me go check it out. So we chose obviously CIA in the long term, but I got my MBA through Johnson & Wales. So it's kind of like a full circle thing, because at that time, Culinary Institute didn't have a master's program.
And what does that program entail? And what made you decide to pursue it?
I love education, and I love learning, you know, more things than I, you know, possibly can maybe on an everyday basis. So that program, it was very interesting because it was online based, and that was like my first online kind of education I've ever had. But it was really in depth. You know, you learn everything from, you know, you kind of take courses on, you know, event planning, and kind of it's basically what you learn in a normal hospitality college, a 4-year, but they're like advanced courses of it. It was really cool because they had a lot of options that you could do, and a lot of electives were part of it. So it's really stuff that you can, you know, that you want to learn and based to learn. But it was super, it was a, you know, 2-year program. You know, it added, you know, 20 to 40 hours of work onto my normal schedule, which was challenging, but, it was super cool because, and it drew me to the program because one, it was still counted as like an, in-person, you know, college certificate, diploma. Plus it was like super flexible on timing, but it was just like the clients too. Like, you had every 3 weeks you switch classes. So you did like one class at a time, and then you kind of went from there.
Cool. Awesome. So, and then just to round it all off, where are you now, or what are you doing now for work?
Yes. So right now I actually just moved to Boston 3 months ago. And I basically run events for a commercial skyscraper. So I do a bunch of different pop-ups. I do 90% of our budget has to be local. So I work with like a lot of local vendors. So anywhere from bakeries in the North End, which is like the huge Italian area of Boston, to, you know, small bakeries, small catering companies. We started working with a new vendor that, you know, basically provides catering options for, you know, maybe in small food trucks or small mom and pop places that can't like scale out. So, I love it. And it's, and you know, especially in the age of bringing people back to the office, it's super important that these events happen regularly. And kind of are pristine and educational, that we can bring people. Like next week we do a mixology class. So we do a lot of cool, fun, you know, food and beverage based events.
I've never been to Boston. I plan on going at some point, so hopefully we'll hang out. But I haven't gone mainly because for the longest time, I've had a blood rivalry against the city of Boston because of the sports teams. The Bruins and the Patriots, of course, have been the downfall of all of my sports childhood dreams of the Bills and the Sabres. So I've just recently been like, yeah, I should probably go to Boston. But there was just this crushing thought whenever I thought of the city because of how much they've damaged the happiness of my childhood. But that's just a sports fan's one rant.
Yeah. So. Maybe the new Bills stadium will give you guys a little boost. Maybe we'll get a playoff game out of you.
Hey, maybe this, I think this year we got the Super Bowl. I said that for the last 25 years of my existence, but this one,
I think as long as I've known you, I think you've said that, and I'm still waiting. So maybe tomorrow, next year's the year.
Oh yeah. What do you like about events planning? Or just events in general.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, this job exists, because, you know, after the past 2 years that, you know, events have kind of, you know, they were at the forefront of, you know, everyone's mind and thought, and they had to plan events to 2 years where there's nothing. And I think my favorite thing is, especially, I mean, in the current role, that I can still have my food and beverage knowledge with, you know, picking vendors, tasting food, what events should we do? And also like doing the front house, interacting with people. You know, we choose really good vendors that, you know, are on time, prepare themselves, you know, have really good food, you know, local. So then the whole rest of the event, I can kind of, you know, mingle with people, talk about, you know, what did they want to see more. So it really, you know, and I, when I was in culinary school, before culinary school, even maybe 3 years ago, I would never guess that I would be in this role. But I think it shows, you know, how much hospitality paths are different. And, you know, I think that bridging the gap of, you know, having that front house experience, back house experience, and managing people, you know, has really kind of driven me to, you know, be successful. You know, I'm only 3 months in, but it's, you know, success is, when you have an event, like, success is based on, you know, happy people, you know, attendance, and, you know, overall budgeting, food quality, et cetera.
Yeah. No, thanks for sharing that. I think it's super cool what you're doing now. I think it's a really good fit, a really cool role. And it's just like, I think there's a lot of diversity in the type of food and, you know, clientele you'll be able to work with. So I think that's really exciting. I know we want to come on to talk about hospitality, and thank you for sharing your path, but I know we also wanted to just talk about the industry in general. What's been on your mind recently? I know we had this conversation a few months ago about coming on the podcast, but what's been on your mind recently about the industry that you kind of want to get into?
Yeah. You know, I think with the industry, it's, you know, even since, you know, me and you were in culinary school, I'm not even going to say how long ago it was, because it feels like it wasn't that long ago, and I think it is. It's changed so much, you know. And, you know, after, I think a huge wide opening for me of the industry was, you know, I lived in Scottsdale for 5 years before moving to Boston. And I was blessed and, you know, honored to become the GM of at a hotel company of the restaurant and the room service department, in which I was the youngest GM in the whole entire company, which is 115 hotels. And that was, you know, huge, trusting a 25-year-old to do that and be in charge of, you know, 110 employees, plus dealing with, you know, executive chef who's been there 30 years. And it was super interesting, because when you deal with, you know, when you're an assistant manager and you deal with, you know, the daily stuff, but then you're in charge of a $10 million budget when you're 25 and 60 employees who are depending on you. It was super wide opening for me. And, you know, it taught me so much and I learned so much. And then, you know, with the pandemic hitting, you know, it's, you know, it was hard times. I mean, it was hard times for everyone. But it really got open to me of what matters for me personally. And, you know, work-life balance is everything. And I think that as hospitality in general, my personal opinion is that's kind of where it will take course. And I think that's also kind of where you see maybe a staffing shortage in the industry compared to, you know, what it was, you know, 2-3 years ago, that really people would sacrifice, in my opinion, you know, a pay and have a better work-life balance situation. Which I think is interesting to say, because, you know, before, you know, when I was GM, I was, you know, 14, 12, 14, 16 hours, some days, you know, a day, and I was five or six days a week. And I never had that. And I think it taught, me, you know, having a little bit more social life, because you had nothing else to do because the restaurants were closed, to really see kind of what I was missing the past, you know, 4 years, in the industry.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. I mean, similar thoughts just from when I was managing a restaurant, and I loved it and it was high energy, but I definitely like took away from personal relationships. And I talked about this in the podcast, you know, it took away from my own mental health in terms of just like overworking. And it wasn't like it wasn't really an environment that was toxic. It was just more so the workload was so much and there was so much going on that it was just like, I didn't have time really to worry about much else. So I definitely get that. And what you said about, you know, taking less pay, for a better work-life balance or just switching out of the sector entirely. I think I've seen a lot of that over the past 2 years, especially. I see a lot of people online complain how they can't find work and how it's so tough. And of course, it's definitely a hard labor market right now. But I also see people putting out there that, oh, I'm trying to pay people this much or I'm trying to pay people that much. And it's like, it's not just about pay. I mean, yes, of course, pay is important, especially in a time of such high inflation and everything else that's going on around the world. But it's also about the culture and about how you treat your employees and what you value them as people and how you value them as individuals. And I find it interesting to see that that still isn't recognized, you know, after everything that happened with COVID. You would think that would be a wake up period for a lot of people in the industry to be like, hey, like, yeah, we need to increase pay, but we also need to treat people better. You know, it's not just like, oh, we need to increase pay, but we can still treat you like absolute shit. Like, no, there's two things that need to happen. There needs to be a value perspective monetarily, and there needs to be a value perspective financially. And so I think it's really interesting to see how some restaurant people still don't get that.
Yeah. And I think that's why, I mean, if you're looking at a back house scenario or front of house scenario, that's why a lot of people are leaning to big restaurant chains or big restaurant groups. Because those, you know, one restaurant places, they necessarily can't afford to do the perks for you. But at the end of the day, it's just treating people right and being open and, you know, inclusive and, you know, hey, I need a day off because I've been working, you know, 14 hours for the past, you know, 4 months. Like, you know, and I think that's where it's become now is, you know, the pandemic, you know, for a lot of these companies have been the excuse to, you know, oh, we can't hire, we can't do this, we can't spend money on this right now. But at the end of the day, you're losing more money because you're losing people.
Yeah. And I definitely see that. I also see some reverse situations where it's like, we'll get hourly in the door, but then we'll run our managers into the ground. And it has to be at all levels. It can't just be like hourly and it can't just be managers getting work-life balance. Like, it does have to be a system that's equitable and fair. And, you know, you have to take that into account with people.
Yeah.
The reason why I went into the research and development space, the food manufacturing space is, you know, I'm kind of torn between what I love to do. I love cooking, but I love food business, but I also love podcasting and writing. And now that takes up more time than I would have had if I was in restaurants working 80 to 90 hours a week. So I think it's super important that, you know, there is that realization that for many people, it's just not just about restaurants, and you can really find passion in food outside of restaurants. And this isn't a plea to get people out of restaurants, but I think it's super important. And you kind of said about inclusivity too. And I think that there still is somewhat of an issue. You know, I post all the thoughts of people in the industry, and sometimes there is hateful comments, and there's people that are closed-minded, and there's people that will lash out for certain things that people say. And it's like, you know, it'd just be a lot easier if you just treated everyone fairly and with some respect. But
yeah, I think that gets lost, you know, unfortunately. And I'll be honest, like, that's why I've quit some jobs, you know, is, you know, and it's hard because then you have some jobs that, you know, it's all about work. And I was just having this conversation with someone the other day that a lot of people want to be themselves at work, and they want to, you know, talk about their family. They want to talk about, you know, what they're doing this weekend. And I think that the culture, you know, 2 years ago in the industry was, you know, you work, you work, you work, you work. And that's changed. I don't know if you've seen it, Ray, but it's changed that, you know, there's a little bit more time for that. And I think with, you know, the pandemic, when the restaurants were closed and the hospitality suffered greatly, that people saw what they had and like, oh, I miss, like, for me, oh, I could never gone home because I was working so much and I could never see my nieces and my, you know, my brother and my mom and dad. And then, you know, the pandemic hit and I had a little bit more time to do that. And then that was really the turning point for me.
Yeah. No, I could definitely see that. I think also when you see kind of more so towards leaders in the industry, I think sometimes a lot of chefs or just a lot of people in general can become very distant to their hourly workers or the people that are on the line or grinding out the hard work or doing the work that a manager might not be doing at that time. I think you really have to keep empathy in the front of your mind and focus on that when dealing with any employee. You know, it's interesting managing people, as you can attest to. You know, you just said all the people that you managed and had to kind of maneuver around, and even just relationships in general with vendors, with suppliers, with producers, with your reps, everything. I think it's all important. I think the world of restaurants and the world of food in general is a little less tolerable to kind of the disrespect or just the anger that can happen. And I think there is another part of this with chefs where it's like, you know, that's another issue. It's just like the unresolved issues, the lack of awareness, the lack of mental health care, the lack of empathy for the, you know, for everyone. I think in the industry, I think we all need to be a little bit open-minded to certain things. But it's just interesting to see, like you said, kind of the shifts and the changes, and still the people struggling to find and retain talent. And it's, you know, not, I don't think everyone's, I mean, yeah, labor is really tough right now. I mean, I'm not going to lie that it's not, but there's some people out there doing some really good work retaining the people they have, and, you know, making sure the people you do have in house feel like they're supported and valued and recognized.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, going off that, I think that you saw, you know, a lot of hurt in the past 2 years, and a lot of these companies, restaurant groups, even small restaurant groups, were so grateful to their employees. I mean, it doesn't have to be monetary, just like the compassion for them and be like, hey, we're in this together. And you'll see, I mean, you know, if you look at graphs, you know, from 20 years, you know, from today, that you'll see that those companies and those groups and small businesses, I mean, that's, they'll have the longest retention, is because they really, you know, driven the market and they really want to hang on to their employees. You know, an average salary, I mean, average, you know, retaining of a manager, you know, we did the math at a previous job. It's like from recruiting to hiring to training, it costs like a company anywhere from like $10,000 to $15,000. And I would tell you, it's the amount of managers that, you know, restaurants go through from many different facets, you know, that's a lot of money a year for a restaurant. Even a hotel that, you know, brings in millions and millions of dollars a year. So I think we have to look in at more of like the caring compassion and what that means for someone to be them and bring their, you know, different facet to it. But like what you said earlier, like, I'll tell you, if I had 10 managers, you know, let's say 8 of them left, it's because they didn't have respect from, you know, their line level employees or their staff. And then they never gained it. You know, it's about not necessarily doing the work, but understanding them and being compassionate. Hey, if they have a problem, make sure you follow up on it. And you're really caring about it, because they're bringing up a concern because it bothers them. And you really just have to kind of be mindful of like the hourly staff, and, you know, because for them, they might not see the big picture, and that's not their job to. So really kind of, you know, being compassionate, and that's what, when I was, you know, when I managed people, that's kind of what I did. Cause that's, I mean, I grew up on that treat people with respect and care about them. And they spend more, I mean, in the restaurant industry, a lot of times you spend more time at work than you do, you know, at home. So that's their, you know, that's their first, second home for a lot of people, and they want to feel respected and they want to feel heard.
Yeah, no, definitely. I've been very blessed to have really great, just leaders in the industry for myself. I've had a few rough ones, but even now, currently, I have such amazing support in what I'm doing and the work I'm doing in the last few years. And yeah, I mean, I think of this one person who was like my GM at the time, and I just remember her, like, you know, I had just started as a chef in this kitchen, and she was my GM, and how she had this family she had to take care of, but how many hours she put in, how much she cared, not only about me, but just the staff and the product and the integrity and the customer. And just, she taught me so much about standards and why it's important to have standards and why it's important, even if sometimes it didn't make sense, or even if it made things longer and made things take more time, doing it right really does matter. And treating people right really does matter. And taking the time to talk to them matters. And she taught me so many lessons just about managing people and about quality of product. And so, yeah, I think it's those leaders that are really important. I think a lot of times we can get into a negative view space of the kitchen, but there's a lot of great people within the restaurant industry and hospitality in general. And I think there's a lot more than I think are recognized. And so I do think it's important. For you, what has been really important in terms of inclusivity and kind of just being aware of that? I think that's a super important topic. I don't think I've done enough justice touching on, but creating and cultivating a work environment where inclusivity matters.
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question. I think that's what a lot of people in their, you know, starting out in their career, or, you know, they could have been in their career. I mean, both my parents were in their, literally worked for the same company in their same job for 34 and 36 years. And then my mom decided to go back, you know, as a contractor for it. So she's, I guess you could even up the 36 years. I think it's hard. I You know, and I would tell you, I really didn't know the answer until I started in my current job. And, you know, I think it's really cliche to say, and it's really, you know, an interesting choice of words, but it's really just like being yourself and being you. And, you know, what does that mean? I think it means just you're a different person. You bring a different skill set, and really being open and transparent. And, you know, whether that's, you know, I think a great example is one of my really good friends still, and one of my best mentors that I first, when I went into the industry started, he was like, "Zach, there's one thing you need to know." And I said, "What is that?" He's like, "There's no crying in food and beverage." He said, "There's a walk-in for that." And it's weird that I've had a lot of restaurant jobs and that's the same, but I'm like, at the end of the day, like, God, some people just need a therapist. I know I have before. And it's like, and I think that's like the whole mental health aspect of it. Cause it's a really hard industry. It's a really hard job. You know, and in my current job, you know, and one thing that really, you know, I've had a lot of relationships in the past and a lot of different things. And, you know, during, the start of COVID, actually right before COVID, you know, I met my fiance, currently my fiance. And, you know, I never forget, I told myself, I was like, okay, let me branch off and I'm going to look for someone not in the hospitality field. Ray, you met Mike before. And so I found him, and then I never forgot that we made this date for a Friday night. I'm getting off on tangent, but I'll go back to the question. We made this date for a Friday night, you know, at a busy restaurant. The man doesn't make a reservation. And I was like, okay, you know, someone's not in the hospitality field on a Friday night that they're not making a dinner reservation. And it's weird that, you know, in my previous jobs, you know, I've never been able, felt comfortable talking about, you know, my personal life, or, you know, felt that I need to. But, you know, in my current job, you know, we have a pride channel that's just basically, you know, talk about anything that's, you know, that you need to talk about, you know, providing, you know, free mental health support services, free health insurance. And it really makes it open for everyone. And I think that is the number one key of what people, you know, in their 20s, 30s, you know, even people have been in the job 40 years are looking for. And inclusivity means a variety of different things for different people. But, you know, for me, it means just to be like welcome, feel like you have a space for it. To feel like you can make an impact, when you're truly being yourself. Cause I've been moments where, you know, I haven't necessarily been myself, you know, I've had, you know, everyone has their own personal journey and personal thoughts, but, you know, for me, for so many years in the industry, I felt the need to have a work life and then a personal life, and those two never clash. And, you know, I think that's important for people to be, you know, open and honest with, you know, coworkers, colleagues, cause, you know, at the end of the day, like if, you know, if you feel like you're not welcome or supported, then, you know, what do you have that job for? You know, just a paycheck.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. And I think that's why I struggle so much with when people kind of diss non-restaurant work, because there's so many great things. It's not like we're looking at a completely different industry and you're still in hospitality. You're just not in a direct restaurant. But the support channels that you have and the just the environment that's been built for you and for the employees in your company, so obviously different and so rewarding for you and rewarding for everyone there. And I'm sure if I was working there, it'd be rewarding for me. Like, just in general, it's a much healthier and open and dynamic space because of how diverse and how open thought can be. And we unintentionally set up these boundaries in kitchens. I think sometimes, at least when I was there, there was a lot of this. And to go back when I was starting out, I mean, like, to go back and just, if we had those channels and those operations, and maybe not every kitchen has Slack set up to where there's like a group chat, but, you know, being open about those things and being open about the differences that people might bring to the table, and being okay and comfortable to have an environment where people feel okay to talk about those things. And it should be like that. I mean, and, you know, a lot of times people can be private about their life, and some people might not want to bring their personal life into their work, but if they want to, it shouldn't feel like you're kind of stepping into a different water or a different lane because you want to just talk about missing a date Friday night or not having a reservation Friday night with your fiance, which also I will say that is a huge mistake to not make a reservation on a Friday, Mike.
I know. He regrets that constantly, and I make sure I tell
well, now
everyone
it's,
about that.
Now it's out there.
Great. But
everyone, well, not everyone.
It's out there.
The listeners of this podcast will know at least.
Exactly. So they can call him out for it. But he has made a restaurant every single time after, so we are all set.
Awesome.
He learned.
Cool. Cool. Well, thank you for sharing all of this. Where can people follow you if you want people to follow you on Instagram, or where can people kind of get in touch with you?
Oh yeah, I have all the channels, definitely LinkedIn me. It's Zach Moquin, Moquin. Instagram, I'm kind of hidden. It's Zach, but it's Zac_Moquin, Moquin. But yeah, feel free. I do, even people at, back in Culinary Studio America, any internships I have chats with about what the future looks like or where they can go. I do resume help as well. And if I can't help them, Mike's really good at resumes, so we kind of tag team that. He's done a few for some colleagues, but yeah, you can find me those. And, if you need my contact, I'm sure Ray has it too.
Yeah, I'll put some stuff in the notes below if you go to the episode description. That's a big one. So you might actually get people reaching out. A lot of people have asked me about resume work. So if you're offering, I think that would be very helpful.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and it's a free service. I don't charge anything for it. It's one of the only things you get free these days.
Seriously, though, if you need resume help, message Zach, because we all know how important that is, especially now. The job market's competitive, man. I mean, it is so. I mean, yeah, it's an employee market, but still, it's so competitive because of that. So that's a good point. Zach, thank you so much for coming on. Before you leave, I end all my interviews the same. I try to end all of them the same. Sometimes I forget this question, 165 episodes in. But now that you've talked to me on this podcast, you've talked to the Line Cook Nation, a group of chefs, cooks, sommeliers, people in the food industry in general, everywhere, just listening, trying to get more information. What does it mean for you to talk to an audience like that?
I think for me, it means the community. I think that the hospitality in general, food industry, whatever you want to call it, is, and like I said earlier, it's such a network base, and there's so many people who enjoy the same exact thing in a little bit different way. So I think one of the cool things is, from 6 years ago, I never thought I'd be talking on this podcast, nor would I thought Ray would, be having a podcast, which is super cool and super interesting. But I think it's one of those community builders, and I think it's such a cool community from, I've met so many best friends, I've met, coworkers and friends for life on, in the hospitality field. So it's been really cool. And I think that's the network of, even professional networks has been really cool. And that's kind of my greatest, take back from it.
Nice. Awesome. Well, Zach, thank you so much for coming on, and it was a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah. Thanks, Harry. Appreciate it.
So there you have it, the interview with Zach Moquin. Don't forget the resume thing. I'm going to put his LinkedIn and his Instagram in the description. He said, reach out if you need help with your resume. A resume goes far, so check them out. Check him out and send him over your resumes if you need help. Also, if you love popcorn or kettlecorn, go to kettlecorncreations.com to check out my family's business. Really excited and proud of my mom and dad for launching an online store. They have great tasting kettle corn, so go check it out at kettlecorncreations.com. The description is in the bio of this podcast. And last but not least, go to linecookthoughts.com to read the official Line Cook Nation blog and get Line Cook Nation merchandise. My most recent blog is with the owners of Pungal Indian Grill in Laurel, Maryland. I had so much fun talking with them. I really hope you go check it out. Thank you all for listening. I'm so excited for the summer of podcasting that I will be doing. I'm really excited to hear your stories. Be sure to reach out to me on Instagram at linecookthoughts, or send me an email at linecookthoughts@outlook.com, and I'll see you on the next Line Cook Thoughts podcast.